Tick, tick, tick. Oh, my God, we already got a phone call. Hold on. You're on with the Peach Machine on Peach Machine's Parade. Who am I speaking with?
Yeah, hi. This is Kevin. I wanted to order a large pepperoni with extra banana peppers.
Kevin? Kevin. One second. Just keep talking, Kevin. I got a bunch of things I got to mess with here as I just got into the studio. Hold on. I'm trying to make it so the phone doesn't sound awful. Okay. This
are
is.
We are on the air.
Yes. One second.
No,
you can get it.
No. We have more important matters to discuss.
All right.
What in the heck is... stuff to talk about today.
Go ahead. Just go ahead and start.
Well, let's start with...
Can you hear me okay? Because I sound terrible in my headphones, but can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Neil, you're real echoey.
Yeah, I know.
In a bathroom?
I am doing this in a bathroom, but it's been modified to be a studio. How about that?
It's producing, you know, quality.
How is that? Can you hear that? What the heck is going on? Dang it. What the heck is going on? How about now?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Is it echoey still?
Let's just power through it.
All right, let's power through it. You just keep talking. We've got this new board in here. It's supposed to make things a lot better, but... I haven't figured it all out, so that's what the problem is. So,
is your whole show going to sound like this?
Just this first part, because I just wanted...
This segment's going to be so strong that it doesn't matter what it sounds like. It's just pure gold.
Right, well, no, that's why I have you on every other week, so we can talk the world of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. It's exactly
so
right. We do great demos.
Let's dive into it. We had originally discussed that we were going to talk about Final Deletion, which I absolutely... want to talk about, but there's so much other stuff going on. So the other things I want to get to, the Brock Lesnar situation, both his UFC fight, what this means for his WWE career, and now the breaking news of his possible positive steroid test, or as I'll say, I don't even know if performance cancer, but some tested positive for something, and that'll swing us right back into the Roman Reigns situation, falling into somewhat in the same category and leading then directly into draft talk. So we got a lot to talk about. They've got to mark down their calendars now.
I know they do.
I just went through it all, so I'm assuming they were taking notes.
So are you on the road right now? Are you driving?
I'm on the road. I'm in the my illustrious wife, Catherine Westhoff, is sitting here. We have my nephew sitting between us, Ben Westhoff, and we have Roger and Ann Westhoff driving and navigating, respectively, up front. And they only get half of the gold we're spending. They're loving it. So,
they're just going to have to have, you know, you're the show. I'm just here to fill in the gaps, so everyone gets to hear your lovely voice.
The beauty of it is after I get off the air, I can then go back and tell them everything you said, and so they're going to get like twice the experience.
Right, and you know they only have 5 hours in the car with you today, so they're not
going
to get that.
We're on the tail end. We're going to we'll be pulling into Fair Hills Resort, amazing, amazing vacation spot in Minnesota. We'll be pulling right into there, right, hopefully, as we're wrapping up our segment. So this should work perfect timing.
All right, sounds good. Well, I'm glad you're on the air with me today. Again, we're on the air with Johnny Dreamer, the Nature Boy. I'm going with that forever.
That's fine.
I could call you by your new name, which Extraordinary Xylophone. Did you like that?
I love that. It is probably my favorite gift of all time. I mean, obviously, he's a Hardy brother.
Okay, so let's start with what we're talking about here. We're talking about the TNA, Total Nonstop Action Professional Wrestling. They have a show called Impact, and they have the famous Matt and Jeff, the Hardy brothers, not from the old school books, the Crime Solvers, not that Hardy brothers.
No mysteries have been solved by these two.
But a lot of mysteries have been created in this recent...
They create mysteries. They don't solve them.
Right. So on the Impact show...
I'm sure our regular wrestling fan listeners remember the Hardy boys from the Attitude Era.
Oh, of course.
As the high-flying, risk-taking, thrill-seeking duo, real life brothers. And they've moved on, and even if you didn't follow them after they left WWE, their careers have continued. Jeff, you know, Matt left and came back and did the a work shoot program with Edge in the early 2000s or mid 2000s, we'll say. Matt was in Ring of Honor briefly. He's been in TNA on and off again. But they've kind of reinvented themselves, or at least Matt has. Jeff's kind of holding it steady with whatever gimmick he had going. But Matt has been doing this new, quote-unquote, broken Matt Hardy gimmick, where he's put a blonde stripe in his hair. He's frizzed out. He almost looks... I don't know quite what person I... But he always feels like he should be playing the piano. Like he's like...
He looks like Beethoven.
He's like... It's like a Beethoven type look he's got going.
His hair's blown out. He looks disheveled. He's crazy. He's a madman. He's broken Matt Hardy, but...
He kind of speaks with a Spanish accent, too, which I've noticed.
No, if you notice, it's more of the it's not a Spanish, it's possibly Spanish, but I think more millionaire. Like he has the he's going
looks
for the
like
royalty. Yeah, high classy is more mixed with Spanish because you know he must know Spanish because as we find out in the videos, his butler is Spanish. I missed all the build up to whatever the heck. I saw the broken Jeff Hardy thing.
We're taking score because the ultimate decision is, was this an amazing, wonderful segment, Final Deletion, or is it just pure trash? And I think one of the pure check marks in the positive column is you don't need any background whatsoever. I mean, obviously, it's pretty established right away. Even if you don't know the Hardy brothers, you do pretty much catch on right away that, okay, these are two brothers. They hate each other for undisclosed reasons, just of jealousy and just, you know, desire. There may be a slight confusion. Wait, is that guy's name Jeff or Brother Nero? I don't know where the Brother Nero
is. I do know where it came
from.
But
loved it. Absolutely loved it.
It's a little bit disappointing. Do you want to know where it came from?
Yes, please. Fill me in.
It's Jeff's middle name.
Is Nero?
Yeah. Yeah, so he was calling him Brother Nero because that's, I guess.
Oh, did that come out back in the WWF days, WWE days?
No, it never came out. It's just he just started doing it, and but people put I guess people who know the Hardy Boys knew it.
It's the whole thing for those who haven't seen it. It's super over the top, kind of campy. Matt is like an ultra villainous kind of millionaire type character. Turned up to 11. Jeff's kind of actually just his normal self, but it's the whole segment opens with a birthday party for Matt and his wife's one-year-old boy.
Max.
And Matt decides that he needs to reclaim the Hardy name to pass on to his as his gift. He's going to reclaim the Hardy legacy to be only his possession to give to his only begotten son. And he has to do that by a final deletion of his Brother Nero.
Right.
So he sets out to issue a challenge to Brother Nero by launching, and then we cut to the set in the next part. He does this by launching a series of what we know to be drones. He calls attack robots. This army of drones descends upon Jeff's mansion, which the lawn is immaculately manicured in the shape of his tribal tattoos, which I've heard other people speculate about, and I agree with. I don't think that was for the segment. I think that's legit shoot the way he keeps his lawn.
That wouldn't surprise me one bit. Well, I think the whole thing is really how Matt and Jeff interact with each other. Like, other than the feud, I think, like, yeah, Matt and Jeff live on these huge million-dollar acreage, you know, monstrous million-dollar bizarre houses, and they ride dirt bikes back and forth and riding lawnmowers to each other's houses. And if you're Jeff Hardy, of course you cut your yard like your tribal tattoo because you're crazy. And you got $1 trillion and nothing but time and a Vicodin prescription.
Another reason I think it's, you can't dispute that the tribal tattoo was the way he cut his lawn. It's because I don't think Matt actually wrecks it when he's, like, driving his lawnmower across it, cackling wildly, because he's destroying this beautiful landscaping exhibition. So if you look, he's not actually mowing any of the tribal tattoos away. like, so they're like, yeah, okay, we'll do this intricate, elaborate, you know, segment, but don't actually mess. I'll throw myself off a 30-foot building into a pile of dirt and let you set me on fire. But let's not mess up.
We won't CGI that, but we will absolutely CGI me cutting your grass. We'll just pretend like that's happening. Yeah, that's a work. No, I think, yeah, I think you're probably right. It's that it's real. And so this whole thing, this whole Final Deletion video aired on Impact, and it was like a 17-minute segment. So if you guys haven't seen this, what we're talking about, you got to have to go on YouTube and just – it's 17 minutes. It's what they aired on Impact. And just search Matt and Jeff or just Matt Hardy Final Deletion or something like that. And it's two parts. The first part is sort of a preview, and then it's now what we're describing now is the Final Deletion.
Yeah.
It's the build-up, I guess, to a match. But what match are they going to have?
I'll finish going through.
Okay.
So the drones show up. They issue this challenge via, like, holographic video.
Via Princess Leia R2-D2 message.
Exactly.
Like, it was great.
Exactly. He then jumps on his dirt bike, chases the drones, smashing them with his guitar. And maybe that isn't all happy at the same time. Basically smashes these drones, but accepts the challenge. So they show up, like, at sunset at this outdoor ring. Somewhere on the compound, with that's lit by tiki torches. That was one thing too. That's like TNA, which is, I mean, granted, it's not the billion-dollar company that WWE is, but like, really, tiki torches? You just went to, you know, to Walmart, tiki torches, like the lighting for the segment. But I would have liked a little more. And there's kind of a history of like. I want to go back to like
well,
Jerry
look, man,
Lawler.
Look, if you're in a blood feud like, with your brother, you want to have, you know, it's Matt's kind of getting an advantage, but you also don't want mosquitoes biting you. That is, I mean,
that's true.
That's the citronella is really played a key role here.
Once again, I'll break my back for the segment and let you light me on fire, but I don't want to get bit by mosquitoes and I don't want to mess up my lawn. Those are two stipulations. But there's a history of matches like this. I feel like so these are the segments that it throws back to me. Like Jerry, I believe it's Jerry Lawler, and there's been a few of them of the empty arena matches through the years where like feuds got so hot and the fans were so ravenous about feuds, which was not the case with this one. But where they would say we're going to do an empty arena, so anything goes. Also, a lot of times those kind of elements are played into it, and it gives it a very different feel. Wrestling matches are so bizarrely different just from removing the crowd noises and like a the what would be quote unquote the natural setting alone creates such a different atmosphere dynamic to them, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. I think back to the Boiler Room matches, especially the first one, Undertaker Mankind Boiler Room match, where the decision was made there'd be no play-by-play, where normally they would be calling the matches. Part of the feel of that match really separates it from other just hardcore matches, which there has been many at the time. But aside from not ever touching the ring, being void of an audience around, being taking place in the Boiler Room, was the fact there's no commentary over it whatsoever. It does give it a little, like, that's an example of, I think, where it really worked. It gave it this, more so than even like a raw feel or like, any sort of specific kind of dynamic, it just made it feel different. Which I'll get back to later. I mean, that's the whole thing about whether you loved or hated Final Destination. A, it's different than anything else that's going on TV. I mean, save Lucha Underground, which no one in our kind of positions or in a casual fan's position has seen anyway. So it's different and it's gotten people talking, which I think is at this point, like TNA has been rendered so obsolete and kind of such an afterthought. I really do. Normally, I'm not one who would say, hey, any press is good press. But in this case, I think just the fact that if you listen to wrestling podcasts, they're 99% of the time they never even mention TNA. And the fact that podcasts, at least I regularly listen to, were doing full segments on Final Deletion, granted to say how much they hate
well,
it.
Well, now...
Still, like...
Now you're saying that this Final Deletion segment did get a ton of press and a lot of people talking about it. However, the follow-up to it, the next weekend on Impact, the show lost like 30% of its viewership. Like they were down.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they lost a lot. Yeah, I know. It's weird. Like, you'd think, well, so people were into the Final Deletion, but they're not into TNA, and they're not in, and you know, they're down. And then they did this third part. Have you seen the third part?
I was
looking for it last night, and obviously you and I did not watch Impact, but it was on Impact.
Well, I never watch Impact. I honestly could see a lot of pure wrestling fans, though. So just to round it out, they have a match, and Matt wins. And it's a crazy match. They shoot fireworks at each other.
Oh, the fireworks are great.
There's phantom element. Jeff turns into a phantom almost at one point. It's almost like a Scooby-Doo episode in some ways. It's very much, it's been compared a lot to, like, The Room, which is, or Birdemic, like, these wonderfully, quote-unquote, wonderfully, like, the best worst movies kind of thing. Also Trapped in the Closet. I've heard a lot of the R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet parallels there, which I totally see. And in that way of, like, some people watch it, if you watch it at face value, you're like, this is just terrible. Because it is. I mean,
it is terrible, but it looks like a home video, but like a high end, like something like you and I would make in high school to, like, hey.
It absolutely feels like this, especially in today's day and age, could have been made for $0, basically.
Right, right. It's all shot on the iPhone. The Tiki Torch is probably around $32, but.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, you know.
They're not giving away Tiki Torch.
Or drones. Drones are expensive.
Well, the drone was just he had, though. That's not, I mean, it's like...
Oh, no extra expense. He'd already purchased it here.
Win, lose, or draw, that drone would have been a different thing.
But what do you think this was? Like, is this like Matt Hardy just being like, I don't care anymore. I'm just doing something crazy.
My understanding is, it makes sense, is that they're in a position, and Matt's kind of, their name value is enough that it was like, we're going to let you do anything you want to do. And I think Matt, I think Matt knows that, like, we want to do something super ridiculous and campy and over the top and I don't want to say ridiculous, but, I think in movie form, in any form, I'm always lukewarm on stuff that's so bad it's good, even when it's intentionally, oh, they know what they're doing. I've always felt like, it's easier to make something that is so intentionally bad that it's enjoyable than to actually produce. It's like a lazy way or a kind of cheap way out of actually trying to do something that is actually good. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. Yeah, they're going like, hey, let's just make it so bad it's good.
In some ways, this does fall in that category where I don't give them a lot of credit for, like, oh, they perfectly captured terrible. And that's a talent. Maybe it sort of is, but it's nowhere close to actually creating something that's nuanced and good. Because that's the thing, it's removing all nuance, for the most part. And that's, like, I think one of the key ingredients to, I don't want to say good art, just because that's not really what, I can't help but come at it, especially because it is basically a short film. I can't help come from it from, like, my film background or film kind of analytics background to say, like, well, as a work of art, that all being said, I really was really entertained by it and, like, appreciated that it re-entered TNA into the conversation. I'm really surprised to hear you say that they lost all that viewership, but at the same time, I could see where wrestling purists who saw this as not a wrestling thing at all, but just a ridiculousness thing, almost would not watch it protest.
Well, that's where I started. You were the first one that brought this to my attention. You said, "Have you seen Final Deletion?" And I said, "No, and I never will." And I meant it at the time. And I was like, "This sounds like garbage. Like, I don't like wrestling that is, like, so spinning, just so, like, suspending your disbelief to such a degree that it's whatever." But now I sort of heard more and more and more and more. I was like, you know what? I bet I'd like this. And I ended up watching it, but. Yeah, just this part, just the final
deletion.
Well, and
that's the thing, and I can remember a ton of segments like this back, especially I think back to, like, when Austin and Angle were doing their buddy thing where they do a lot of ridiculous stuff. I feel like there's a lot of segments in the past in WWE where it's like, I really enjoyed this segment, was entertained by it in and of itself, but I don't like the segment because I think on a whole of what you're trying to do with
it's
wrestling, you should be creating legitimate drama. drama and legitimate tension and legitimate, like, angst and passion and real emotion where fans want, you know, are actually emotionally invested in certain characters, actually, you know, emotionally and against the, you know, the villains, the heels. Like, when you have this level of ridiculousness, comedy, kind of anywhere on the card, it undercuts any effort presently or in the future that you're trying to do of anything of, like, true emotional merit or value. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it takes away... It sets the genre, you know, sets the bar for the genre of pro wrestling.
It's why they always say comedy doesn't draw at the box office. Comedy is great, and comedy is entertaining, and it's funny, and everybody enjoys it, but it's not going to make you buy a ticket. And I think that's kind of what this did for TNA. It's like, yeah, this is wacky, everybody enjoyed it, but I'm not going to go to a TNA show.
But it's not only that it's not going to sell tickets, it delineates your value to create something that's going to be real in the future. You know, like, we look, and we're going to talk about Brock Lesnar, it's been amazing watching Brock Lesnar's involvement in pro wrestling right now, because for a long time, that was a big question of mine. It's like, could you ever, at this point, with the way people look at wrestling, think about wrestling, watch wrestling, what they expected, can you ever really have a pro wrestler that people are legitimately, like, scared of, or legitimately, in their minds, view as, like, a, you know, a physical threat or a physical specimen or, you know, or an athlete. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. You know, like, in the old days, even when you know wrestling, even people who, you know, at a certain point in your mind, whether it be the front or the back, you know wrestling is wrestling, you still think, like, but this guy is a legit tough guy. This guy is, you still, even though the matches aren't legit, you still see the competitors as legit. And in some ways, you still see the competition is, you know, not in the ring, but kind of the aura of their personas competing against each other.
Well, that's gone.
And I questioned when the modern wrestling industry is it possible to achieve that? Would we have to? I always thought you have to strip everything down and basically start a shoot company again, like UFC, build that up, and then switch to working matches, and so that it's kind of back in the closet, so to speak.
Right.
As far as, you know, it's kayfabe again.
That's what happened. That's where pro wrestling came from. It was real, and these guys were beating each other up, and it wasn't that exciting. And they're like, well, we both know we're really good. Listen, you just pin me in 40 minutes, and whatever.
And we'll
have fun.
And we'll make the matches entertaining.
But it's the genie's out of the bottle now. Like, now it's just, it's any other frickin' show. Like, I went to the Muni and saw the Music Man, and they all came out and took a bow with 76 trombones. And it's like, you may as well do that and then just go, hey.
But what,
you know?
Yeah. But what blurs the line, what separates it, is that blurred line. And what does that is the legitimacy of the competitors, even though it's a competition.
Right.
The way you view, and the question is, can you get that back? It used to be they would always get legitimate, you know, Olympians or legitimate, like, football players or, you know, all these guys are like, and they didn't really do it with Kurt Angle, although somewhat, you know, he went to the top of the card, but he was a little. Brock is the first one where, like, you know, and it's a lot of the way he's booked, too, the fact that they only use him, they make it special to see him. And the fact that his matches are so much different than the way other matches are structured, you know, he basically is the only guy who does squash matches. And it makes me realize it's like, it's not just Brock. Other guys could be built this way and have the same credibility and legitimacy in the way they're viewed by the audience. It's just, you have to do it from top. It means it has to be a complete package. Everything you do, every way that person presents has to feed into that, what you're trying to present.
Right.
And I do think in some ways, when they're being presented even on a show that's being that ridiculous, it undercuts what their legitimacy is. So in some ways, I don't. You know, I loved the final deletion. I really enjoyed it. I've heard people say I couldn't even watch and hated it. That wasn't me. But I think it's good. I think it's a good move for TNA in the long run that it just gets their name back in the conversation because they lost viewers initially. I think in the long run, it's going to create a buzz and bring viewers, just bring curiosity viewers back and just make people, well, hey, we're still here. But I don't like what it does for wrestling.
You're definitely right. You're definitely right.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, I think you can correct that pretty easily. You know, with a little. You know, you can't just make. You could make a whole show out of that. That's Lucha Underground, basically.
Right, and that doesn't. I mean, Lucha Underground does good for what they draw. Good for them, but they're not making money.
And it's a totally different thing, too. I mean, I haven't watched that much of Lucha Underground. It's hard for me to speak to the quality of the show. I'm aware of it, and I know kind of what they're doing. But I can't really say, you know, I haven't watched enough continuous episodes to see the way they string together stories and stuff to really pass too much checking on their product. But we kind of got into Brock there, but I don't know. Do you have any more final deletions?
It was really funny. It is Matt Hardy just like in his best, and like this role Matt Hardy's doing, this broken character where he's just this madman, is just awesome. It makes me like the Hardy Boys again. But it's not going to make me buy a ticket to watch them have a match with each other. I just don't think it's a positive for TNA, and that they probably will get some curiosity, but it's a gimmick.
I think, you know, with any type of company, is like, before you worry about making money, you need to worry about building interest and building. You know, I think in their position, it's like, I think first and foremost, we should try to entertain people as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then money will come from that. We worry about making the money in the face, too. How do we get
The money comes from creating stars, okay? That's where the money comes from, and that's in any business. And what this did do was make Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy more of a star. So from that aspect, I think it's definitely good for business. And it leads us into Brock. Final Deletion, I'd say it's an A movie. Check it out. It's 17 minutes of your time. Definitely go check it out. Let us know what you think. But
how are they going to let us know what they think? How is that going
to
happen?
You can tweet to me, at Peach Machine. You can tweet. I don't think you can tweet to you. You don't have a Twitter, do you?
I don't have Twitter. No, you Facebook me. You Facebook me.
We're going to have to talk about Facebook later, but. So I was at UFC 200. I was also at this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I was at 200. The Friday show, and I was at 3 UFC shows this past weekend. Did you see any of them?
I saw 200. Watched all 200.
Okay.
And enjoyed it. The main event is so funny that, like, I was surprised that ended up being the main event. Obviously, the John Jones situation changed things up. That was going to be the main event. But going with Nunez Tate as the main event kind of surprised me. Really glad they did it. But, I mean, probably the most exciting, fun match of the night.
Well, I didn't get to see that match at all. My flight was at 12 a.m. Sunday night.
You had to leave?
I had to leave. I watched Brock, and then I left.
Oh, my gosh. Nunez, I mean, her face exploded. It was unbelievable. Like, it was really, I mean, it was, she hit her with a punch, like, early on, and right when that happened, I turned, Kat was there watching the match, and I said, that she's going to knock her out. This is it. She's getting stopped first round. Like, you could see it coming, that just, like, I don't want to say she broke her will with one punch, but you could see it register with Misha that, like, this girl, I'm going to get outstruck by this girl. I don't know what to do. You know, like, searching for, like, this striking battle is not going to win. What else can I go to kind of thing? And just was clear she wasn't going to find that answer before, you know, it was over. And she just looked, she was a mess after, you know, her face. But, I mean, it was great performance. I mean, considering that she went the distance with Ronda Rousey, was able to survive the strike, you know, the striking. And granted, I think Holly Holm, you know, it's a different animal. Because Holly was so tentative, knowing that the takedown, you're fearing that takedown so much, knowing that if I get taken down, it could be, you know, if she shoots on me, that could be the end of the fight. And so it affected her ability to mount an effect. You know, she did a really effective kind of outside, outpointer, striking-wise, but it didn't allow her to cut loose and just open up on Misha. Nunez was not afraid of going, you know, the ground, and therefore had that ability. Not afraid of her shot, not afraid of going to the ground, and therefore had that ability to really open up her stand-up game. And which, so I don't want to say that her striking appears to be more impressive than Holly Holm's. I think that would actually be a really intriguing matchup I'd love to see. Because I know, I truly believe that Holly Holm has superior striking, but it's how much does that, that she how much is her takedown defense improved, and how much does concentrating on that takedown defense affect her ability to employ a sufficient striking attack. So
what's the next match?
I don't know if they're going to make that match, but that's actually the match I'd like to see next, first of all. And because I think win or lose, it makes for the most interesting. You know, if Ronda wins, or whoever, I just think it's less. All the Holly Holmes matchups are slightly less interesting. I mean, Ronda and Holly is still actually always going to be a draw, whether they do it with either one of them having the belt, or if it's Holly having the belt, or if it's Ronda. But I think you get the belt back on. You know, either get Holly out of the way with the Nunes fight, and you can, or if she wins, you can have her go fight Ronda again. Then you can have her fight Misha again. You know, I think it makes her more.
I think you make Nunes versus Rousey right away. Try to get the belt back on Ronda.
I don't like that as much, actually.
I think Ronda beats her pretty easily, in my opinion. And, yeah.
And then there's no Misha Tate, though, fight, because Misha has now lost both of them. And she's kind of been.
No, but there's a Holly fight.
The Holly fight, but if Holly fights first and wins the belt, then you have that potential Misha fight.
Right.
And that brings in another person to it. But going straight to Ronda just cuts, like, if either one of them wins, it cuts Misha out where you just don't have a matchup then. You know, like,
right.
Looking forward, you know, the programs you're going to book, it just kind of leaves her out of the picture. And I think the more names you can get in the mix in that division, the better. Keeps it more interesting.
Well, Holly has a big fight this Saturday. She's fighting Valentina Shevchenko, and who's a tough out and is looking to take Holmes' head off.
So I guess before we think ahead on anything else, that's true, that she's got to get that challenge. But I'll admit, I'm a Holly Holmes mark. I think she's kind of gotten a raw deal by the UFC. They were so mad that she took that Misha Tate fight that I think she's kind of punished with what she's given. But she is a really, really talented athlete. I think maybe, you know, like, obviously, she's got way less experience than all the other women in the division as far as how long she's been doing MMA, and just has been so impressive.
Right, but you're a fan. You're a fan of Holly Holmes' athleticism.
Yeah.
She's not a draw.
She's got to have the right opponent. She's not a draw to herself.
Right.
Ronda's a draw. Ronda's really the only, it's the only draw of the bunch. Anyway, I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see where that division goes.
Let me tell you who is a draw.
Let's talk about the fight you didn't see, the Lesnar fight.
Right. Lesnar is a draw. Lesnar drew that entire card because, I'll tell you,
I agree.
There was three people the whole weekend that got superstar reactions, okay? Number three was Anderson Silva. When he came to the ring, he was cheered against Daniel Cormier, who was booed. It got even worse after DC owned Silva. But the number two guy of all weekend was Lesnar. He got the second biggest fan reaction, and everyone wanted to see him win, and everyone predicted him to lose, except me. I won $155 on him. Suckers. And the number one star, by far, hands down, mobbed everywhere he went, Nate Diaz. By far.
Uh-oh.
He was a hero. And he was just hanging out, and he was just kind of there Friday night. He was, I don't know, maybe one of his buddies was fighting or whatever.
Did you see him?
I saw him. And he was absolutely, he was just walking through the crowd, just mobbed. And he had like five security guards with him. And people were just like, it was like a pull apart. They were like jumping on him, like trying to like get a photo with him. And he was posing for a few. And then I saw him a couple other times. And then I saw the line that he was signing at. And now Brockwood had a huge line too, but I mean, this is Nate Diaz. He is a hero to UFC fans right now. It is unbelievable.
I'm a huge Conor McGregor fan, but I've been a Diaz brother fan.
Oh yeah.
Before. I remember back watching Nick's fight, both when he beat Robbie Lawler, was like this guy's phenomenal. I mean, that was like a fight which I don't even know what's going on with is Nick. I mean, he had suspended for like super was like 5 years, but then they.
He'll be available to fight in August, I think.
Do you remember what his suspension status or is it still going on?
No, it got reduced. He's back. Here's what's ridiculous about that is Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz, have the fight. They both fail. Diaz fails for weed. Anderson fails for some sort of
steroids.
some sort of PED or whatever. He had some fake story about whatever. And Silva's fought three times since then, and Nate Diaz has not.
So, that's ridiculous.
Or Nick Diaz, yeah. And so Nick Diaz will be eligible to fight again in August. Who knows where he goes? They're talking GSP rematch. They're talking lots of things, but whatever.
But anyway, not Manny Van Buren, but his cousin, who's a judo guy.
Yeah.
That was the first Nick Diaz
fight. Kyle Parisian.
And for a while, it was like my favorite fight of all time. It wasn't like a main event, but it was just like an amazing, you know, like, both Nick and Nate have such complete games. They're both amazing on the ground. Their jiu-jitsu is amazing. And not only like, and they're the kind of ground fighters who, you know, go to finish fights with submissions. Exciting, innovative, you know, ground jiu-jitsu. But then also their stand-up is great, and their style is different. They're, you know, so many UFC fighters, it's like throwing huge bombs. And the way they pick guys apart with their stand-up is just so entertaining and amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I'm so excited to see this, you know, at least Nate finally getting, you know, their due as, like, a star. Because it's like the way they fight, I've always thought their ability to get victories, but also just the way they fight has always said to me, like, these guys should be more respected.
Well, he was a huge superstar that weekend, and he got tons of respect, and he's making a ton of money.
That's interesting that he was such a draw.
Right.
I mean, I would imagine that he'll continue to be, even outside of this Conor McGregor, that he'll now continue to be a big star. So what do you think about Brock's victory?
So
obviously there was a lot of speculation. Hey, were you surprised when WWE let him do this?
No, I wasn't surprised at all, and I think it was still even with what happened, I think it was the smart move. I think WWE, I mean, here's a chance to make your guy super famous and possibly become the baddest man on the planet.
Even if he loses, as long as he's somewhat respectable, it helps his character.
Even if he gets killed, even if he gets knocked out, I don't think that's a much damage. I mean, because everyone knows the game. Everyone knows Mark Hunt can knock anyone out. And, you know, let's just say he does get blasted in the first 5 seconds and gets KO'd. I mean, there's a level of respect there of taking that fight on that sort of notice.
Yeah.
I think it does no harm to WWE whatsoever.
No matter what happens.
And it was ridiculous that they didn't promote it.
This kills him. But no, it doesn't. Because once again, everyone knows that wrestling is pro wrestling. But it's still just the fact that he gets in there and proves that he's like a legit athlete is what it's not about that he's unbeatable. It's that he's like, you know, I think just getting in there is what, because he'll coming off of
5 year layoff
back to WWE. It was off of several, like, I think two losses maybe in the. And granted, like, he had the excuse of the diverticulitis, but whatever the excuse, he still was coming off a loss, and people still saw him as legit. And so I think getting back in there only helps build that, no matter what the outcome. I mean, obviously, I thought it was the right move. I was a little surprised that the W, because I think a lot of times they're short-sighted in kind of view of things.
Very short-sighted.
And, oh, no, you know, we can't. You know, they claim they don't see in this competition, the UFC is competition. But secretly, they kind of do, and like I could see them, you know, like being more concerned about controlling.
Whenever I hear that, whenever I hear the competition thing, I don't think that's the right way to think about it. They're not your competition; they are potential market for you as well.
Yeah,
like you should say, UFC, get big as you can, because we're going to steal as many of your fans and make them both fans, right?
Yeah.
And
if they got those commercials on there, everything, I think it's a huge trend. I mean, and just the fact that it's like a UFC fight. Now, Brock is a UFC fighter, and he's fighting, and he's wrestling in WWE. And that's just going to make those fans want to watch more.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to, like, I don't like pro wrestling, but there's a UFC fighter doing it, and I'm going to watch it, you know, watch for him.
Right.
Kind of thing.
And the network's $9 a month. I don't really care. I'll buy the network just to watch this guy. And, oops, so I forget to cancel or whatever.
So now you talk about him.
So let me give everybody this background here. So on June 26th, so 4 months, about 3 months, how am I going to say, two-ish months ago, Brock is signed for this fight against Mark Hunt, okay?
Uh-huh.
Within the first week, Brock Lesnar was tested by USADA 4 times in 7 days. And that's not, hey, 4 at 1 time. This is guys flying to Saskatchewan, Canada to get his urine and blood 4 times in a week. So we know he was clean that week. And he passes all those. So now I don't know how many times they tested him between this one and I think it was June 26th or 28th. Regardless, his fight was on July the 9th. So he is, and if you remember John Jones failing the test, it was about the same time they both were tested. It's a day or two difference. I can't remember the specific numbers. Doesn't matter. The point is, John Jones' test comes back the Wednesday before the Saturday night. Brock Lesnar's test doesn't come back until yesterday. Why is that?
I mean, not going to go straight to nefarious.
No. But I'm not going to go to that either. But my point is.
But do you think someone withheld that sample or something? You just think I could, you know, who knows? It's in the lab. They're testing them or whatever.
No.
I don't know.
I don't have any problem with withholding or whatever. My point is, you're supposed to be protected.
The way the sample came back, and they have to, you know, John Jones was maybe brimming with it, but Brock, they had to like. I don't look further into make sure whatever.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, they were able. The weird part is they were able not only to do it, they were able to test with John Jones. They got the B sample tested before the fights even. So it is a little strange that they tested both of John Jones' samples and were able to get those processed before they were able to get one of Brock's processed.
So
but,
it's possible.
I mean, I don't know how the procedure works. So.
Right. I don't know either. But it's. Specifically, they were able to do it with John Jones, right? And Brock's came back a week later or 5 days or whatever. It came back later. But the point is, why are we doing these tests? Why are we have this USADA if the idea is to protect fighters, not Brock Lesnar, but protect Mark Hunt from going in there against a guy who could potentially kill him even more so.
If you're not even getting the results
So
they've already... Yeah.
What are we doing these tests for? Okay, sure, he's punished now, but Mark Hunt just took a beating from a potentially juiced-up Brock Lesnar.
Well, do you know what he do? You, and I'm guessing you don't. But what he actually, what was
no, it hasn't came out yet.
Because you know it is like that weird thing. If you hear this and you just immediately think, oh, steroids. He was on steroids. But I mean, there's a potential, and not that I'm not saying it's whatever. But you know, it's like there's supplements that are legal to take and that everybody takes, or I should say everybody, but you know, people take and that are illegal for competition. You know, there's a weird gray area of like the illegal drug, and then. Drugs that are illegal for competition, or supplements that are illegal for competition.
Right.
You know, and I am always curious what exactly it was. You know, how much viability could there be in the excuse of like basically like John Jones' excuse? It was in some supplement that I was given.
Zero.
You know, like if it's anabolic steroids,
it's zero.
You know, or some sort of testosterone. So you know, whatever. It's hard to really claim. You know that you did know what you were taking. But I could see that with certain other stimulant type stuff that's just like, oh, well, this is going to give you more energy or whatever. So you don't know. Either one of them.
If I had to guess, it was some sort of designer cutting drug, some sort of like something designed it. Because he was very big when he left WWE.
Oh, yeah. He was a monster.
He was every bit of 295, 300 pounds.
He's younger than I thought he was, too. He's only 39.
Yeah.
I thought Brock was... I mean, he must have been young when he first... I mean, he was, like, 20 years old when he was first in the WWE.
Yeah, there was a bidding war for him out of college. No, because he went to University of Minnesota, so he's, like, 22.
Yeah, I mean, he's young.
Yeah.
I guess real early 20s, but, yeah.
So now, you have Brock Lesnar. He beats Mark Hunt, and then he tests positive for whatever. Mm-hmm. There's this new rule. USADA now has this 2-year minimum ban on performance-enhancing drugs, whatever. So...
Which, from Brock Lesnar's point of view...
Who cares?
Like, so what? This isn't my main gig. You know, like, I know he wanted to do more fights, and he could have made a ton more money to do more fights. But, and the question becomes, what happens to the money he made for this fight? I know Mark Hunt has been arguing, just already started arguing, that he needs to give him his entire, whatever, $3 million purse or whatever, however much he got, needs to go to Mark Hunt. I don't know what the legality of that is. Is Brock still entitled to the money he earned or...
Well, I don't know. His contract.
What it says about if you end up coming back with a positive test.
But, so that would negate his win bonus, but that would not negate his contract, which is all about the pay-per-view points. So he makes $7 on every pay-per-view purchased. And if there was a million, they've estimated Brock's going to make about $8 to $10 million off of this past fight, not counting, you know, if his bonus or win bonus or whatever. So Brock's, he should give his money to Hunt. If he was cheating, he should give that win bonus because he's still going to make $7 million.
I mean, from and I'm not endorsing what he did, but like I, you know, for Brock, it's still like I understand almost why he would do because it's like winning. I think does in so many ways, even if he never fights the UFC again, winning helps the Brock Lesnar brand a bunch. Even if it comes back later that he was on steroids, that I don't think hurts. You know, because once again, the whole discussion here is how does this affect his perception? Not just from the steroids. I'm talking the entire endeavor of him going, stepping out of WWE, going into UFC, and then coming back to WWE. And the win helps that even more so than, you know, than the positive test hurts it.
Right.
And he has another gig. This is not really what he does. UFC is a part-time thing. So a two-year ban, I mean, even though it's probably a bummer for him because he likes competition, and in that respect, I could see why he wouldn't have or shouldn't have done it. But, you know, it's like he just got a huge payday, and he's still... Well, then the question becomes, does this fall under the WWE's wellness policy, and is it going to affect him in that?
Right, so that's what we need to talk about next. Is he's so Brock is booked currently in the works for SummerSlam, which is in, you know, the end of August, against Randy Orton. That's the talk.
Yeah.
So that means he should be back on TV, you know, soon. Now, they just had Roman Reigns suspended for 30 days, and basically he's not going to miss, you know, he's missing the TVs, but he's going to be back in time for the pay-per-view. So they could do the same thing with Brock. They could suspend him for 30, bring him back in time for SummerSlam. I don't think it'd hurt his drawing power one bit. And or do they do anything at all? Because he didn't fail a WWE test.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think about that? What do you think they should do versus what are they going to do?
I mean, I think what they should do... it's such a weird gray area of WWE. So especially because it's Brock Lesnar, who's such a part-timer anyway. He fights once every blue moon. So there's plenty of time where you could say, okay, he just much like they did with Reigns, he's spinning right now until for X amount of time, and it's a, you know, a super harsh distance, quote-unquote, for WWE standards, their wellness policy, it doesn't affect at all his fighting schedule. And then you get in this weird gray area, though, of, like, with, like, the UFC, it's like this guy is suspended for, whatever, 2 years, and that it clearly, obviously means they are not allowed to fight for 2 years. And so then they retire and make a commentary or whatever they do, or, you know, they can do anything else. With WWE, it's like, oh, he's suspended. Well, does that just mean he doesn't get matches? Because clearly, you know, it's WWE. The matches really aren't the thing, but they kind of are, too. So, like, could you still have Brock Lesnar doing, like, and even if you're not bringing him to the arenas, like, if you're still going to promote the match and have him, it's essentially like oh, we can't have him on TV because we suspended him, but, like, you're still giving him a main event at, you know, like, if you're punishing him, you're still giving him a main event at SummerSlam and promoting the match. So it's, like, it's really silly not to, maybe you don't bring him to the shows and have him in the arena, but you go to his, you know, his training facility and show him training and stuff like that. And so you fulfill
you could easily
your wellness
do this.
Policy and the suspension, and you kind of, you still have Paul Heyman building tension between Randy Orton and doing the talking, and you're still showing Brock and, like, and having that different feel of having it be segment of him, like, much like almost what they did with Shane. The best thing they've done promotion-wise was when they showed Shane doing, like, MMA training and stuff, and you were like, ooh, this guy, he's really tough, you know? He's, like, he can legit.
Yeah, man, he's so tough, he's going to fight in a baseball jersey.
And tenfold, and, like, it feels different and establishes, like, oh, yeah, he's legit.
Well, Shane was so tough and so well-trained, he decided to wear, you know, Nike Airs and warm-up pants and a baseball jersey to fight The Undertaker. That's how good he was. He didn't even need to wear the uniform. He said, screw it, I'm not even wearing the gloves. We're bringing it.
Did you see those training segments they did with him where he was, like, in his MMA gym?
I saw a couple of them,
kicks and stuff and practicing his Muay Thai.
Yeah.
He
apparently really trains.
Going into it, when they first announced it, like, this is ridiculous. Shane's an old man. And, like, just from the segments, I was like, I tell you what, I think he could legitimately beat, you know, if this was his shoe, I think he'd beat The Undertaker. You know, it really made him look legitimate.
Here's what made him look illegitimate, was when he would walk out there and Vince McMahon's hair was browner than Shane's gray hair.
I'm saying in the WrestleMania build-up where it was Shane versus...
Yeah,
I know. Yeah.
And Shane would show up with a full head of gray hair, and meanwhile his 75-year-old dad is yelling at him with a full head of brown hair.
Yeah.
I'm like, we couldn't have gone to the whatever person backstage and had your hair a little touch just for men to come through there. So WWE, here's what I would do if I was WWE. I would just ignore this and just be like, who cares? Like, he's not, like, we do our testing. He didn't fail any of our testing. Like, I think any move they make is going to be scrutinized so heavily. I wouldn't make any move. And just maybe hold him off for SummerSlam. You don't even need him for SummerSlam. Bring him back in frickin' November or December when your pay-per-views traditionally, you know, crap the bed. Do that. Save Brock versus Orton for Survivor Series or something.
Yeah, what's the date on the SummerSlam pay-per-view?
The SummerSlam pay-per-view is, I don't know yet, I don't know. It's late August, something like that, the 24th or something.
Yeah, so there's enough time to do a month suspension. They could do a 30-day suspension on it.
Right, but they can also do a 30-day suspension on them the day after SummerSlam. They get to choose when they do it. That's in their policy.
Oh.
August 21st.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, then you could definitely do that. I think you do catch some heat then, because then it really does comes off even more as just like, oh, well, this is because they knew they weren't going to use them again until... Mania or whatever.
Well, okay, so here's the difference between the suspensions. Here's the difference.
I think if you do it now, people realize, but it doesn't come off quite as much as you know, when a pitcher gets suspended and it falls in between the days he wouldn't have been pitching anyway, and it's kind of like, well, that was a joke.
Right. That's exactly what they should do.
I think you do it now, and it still doesn't affect anything, but it doesn't come off. Joke.
You're right. You suspend him now for 30 days. You don't even talk about it. You just say he's suspended. The difference between that suspension and UFC suspension is that 30 days for Brock is 3 TVs, meaning, or 4 TVs. He doesn't get paid for those dates. So he's, I mean, you can say, oh, you're not even using him. That's the point. You're not even using him. So suspend him. He's not going to make his money. You're not going to pay him for a month. And then you do your build-up a month later, and then you have suspended him, he's recovered from his fight, and you can still do your build-up and have your match at whatever September pay-per-view is or whatever.
So, kind of moving on, I agree. I think that you can, I mean, there's a thing a lot of ways they can work it. I think the bottom line is, this really doesn't hurt his WWE career. The A, they book around it, and B, doesn't, I think, hurt his perception with the fans, really.
Totally agree. I think there will be some negativity, but I don't think that hurts his draw at all. I think people will be upset, and
it just makes him more of a heel.
It just makes him more of Brock Lesnar. It's like, yeah, I don't care.
so along those same lines, what do you feel about the Roman Reigns positive test and suspension? And I mean, which people have been, I mean, I should say people, you know, a smarks have been crying for him to go. I don't want him to go full heel. I want him to stay basically the same character, but. You know, like basically
right.
Book him against faces.
I'll tell you what I would do.
A major difference, and have him put a little bit more of an attitude of like where he thinks he's the guy,
right?
You know, in there, just don't book him. I mean, that's the only thing. But and then playing up this thing of like him, his ego. Yeah, I think this suspension for him is the perfect opportunity to really like this. This is what makes him. A heel is that he thinks he's or really the whole WWE for him the rules don't count, you know, almost.
That would be a great way to put it.
He thinks he's allowed to do whatever he wants, and the rules don't apply to him because he's the special chosen one. You know, that's why people hate him, and this plays right into that. And so I think they can really capture, you know, really capitalize and finally go full heel with him, and not in a way that he changes his character, in a way that he just fights faces. Like the guy that you know that he's fighting against not a heel sitting like you don't want Seth Rollins trying to get you basically tell the people he's fighting to stop trying to get heat on him because Rollins should be taking it.
You know what they should really do is that they shouldn't have taken him off TV. They should have just not paid him for a month and made him work. That would have been, I mean, that's more punishment.
Christmas in July.
Right. Yeah, Christmas in today. July. It's coming up down at the South Broadway Athletic Club, I'm sure. So, before we get, I got to tell you, you're listening to WOZOLP Knoxville, 103.9 on your FM dial, or WOZORadio.com. You're listening to Peach Machine's Parade with Johnny Dreamer on the line. We're talking WWE. We're talking some UFC. My show is every Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or you can check us out on the interweb. Sometimes I post my shows at halfguarded.com. Those are free to listen to if you'd like to as well. So Half Guarded, and you can tweet to me at Peach Machine if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, and we will talk about those on further shows. So again, WOZOLP Knoxville, 103.9. Thank you for listening. And what I was going to say about Roman Reigns is that I think you just fire him. Like, who cares? He's a lost cause. Like, you can make. I mean, you really could. I mean, I know you're laughing because like they've wasted all this time on him. But that's exactly what they've done. They fire guys all the time if they don't use. Like, he's. I don't. In my opinion, you can't bring him back. He's not going to draw.
I think he's got a lot of potential as a heel. I think it's a John Cena type heel where fans need to still feel like WWE kind of wants him to be a face, but you're choosing to reject him. And you are deciding you don't like him. You're not letting the WWE decide how you're going to feel about him. They play in situations where to heighten that feeling. So setting him up, where he was feuding against AJ Styles or someone. Like setting him up in that feud, like what John Cena's in now, they're kind of doing with John Cena. The problem is John Cena actually is still a face with people who just boo him. But where it's like the WWE is setting up where it's like, well, you can cheer either one, and just happens to be that everybody chooses to cheer the other guy and to boo Roman Reigns. Those are the kind of feuds and programs I think he needs to be booked into.
Well, I think the feud he had with AJ Styles was really good for him in that he had a lot of good matches and he was getting some good response, negative, but AJ playing sort of the baby face, sort of carrying him to really awesome matches, which he's had about 2 or 3 months in a row.
I think Rollins is good for match quality.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Well, I think my family, they've had their fill of the radio, so we're going to wrap it up pretty soon here.
Gotcha. No worries.
But I do want to say, I think Roman's good, or Rollins is good for match quality, but it's just not good for, it puts him in the middle where like, well, he's such a clearly, we're round and such clearly the heel, we can't really, we can't boot both of them, we don't want to cheer, we're not really cheering either one, or it just ends up being, blah, because, as far as a few, because there's no, you can have face versus face, you can't have heel versus heel, in my opinion.
I agree. Well,
and I'm not saying turn round to face, but you got to pair Reigns up with someone else.
All right, since you got to go, and you've already given me an hour, and I really appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate your family tolerating
Peach Machine's Parade. We didn't even get to the draft stuff, but we'll look forward to seeing. I guess we'll do a show where we discuss how we thought it turned out.
Yeah, man, but quickly, tell me about, tell me where, how the Boca Mo breakout is going. Tell me.
It's going great. It's going great. A lot of fun. Right now we've got one room open. It's called Y2K. If you don't know, I run an escape room in Columbia, Missouri, Breakout Como. You can check it out, breakoutcomo.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, Breakout Como, and give us a like. We're affiliated with the whole Breakout franchise in the Midwest area, Breakout KC, Breakout Lawrence. They got Breakout Waikiki in Hawaii, too. But we've got one room right now. It's called Y2K, and it's set on New Year's Eve in 1999. You're at a New Year's Eve party, and you find out the internet is going to crash and kind of destroy the world, and so you have 1 hour to midnight to basically hack the internet system and stop the Y2K crisis from happening.
And so the joke's on you because the whole trick is that you go in there to hack the wireless, or you hack the internet, and it's a dial-up modem, and so you just hear for 40 minutes.
There, as a matter of fact, there may be some dial-up problems going on in there.
Shocking.
Yeah, you're right. I guess some of the stuff. There's a ton of like '90s nostalgia music and stuff. But anyway, we'll open our next room coming up pretty soon. It's going to have a Mark Twain theme, so it's going to have a lot of Mark Twain memorabilia and stuff. It's like the room's set in a Mark Twain museum, and there's kind of some National Treasure-esque storyline to the whole thing. People coming, you know, you've got to steal his manuscripts, his secret manuscripts before other people come to steal them, basically. But that'll be our next room, and it'll be opening early next month. We're the premier escape room in Columbia, Missouri. If anyone listening is ever in the area, come on by, check us out. Mention
the Peace Machines Parade. He'll give you 50 cents off.
I'll say, oh, yeah, I was on that show. That's what I'll get you.
All right, Johnny Dreamer, thanks, my man. And tell your family hello for me. And
I'll say hello for you.
Have a great vacation.
I'll be glad to hear from you.
All right. Thanks again. I'll let you go.
All right. Talk to you later, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Oh, peace.
Jeez. Kayfabe, brother.
Sorry, guys. That was one.
Brain telling me what I want, I need. Got our secret spot and no one else knows how to get there. The words just poured out of you like a melody. I just could not believe the things you're telling me.